Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, the International Catholic Peace Organization Pax Christi is calling for impartial investigation into a series of political assassinations in Honduras and reform of the country's judicial system, nearly 1 year after a military coup ousted President Manuel Zelaya. Forgiveness and education, key factors to any lasting peace in the Middle East. We hear from the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem about the Christian witness to both. And the Vatican sends greetings to the world's Buddhists for an important feast day. International Catholic Peace Organization Pax Christi is calling for an immediate and impartial investigation into a series of political assassinations in Honduras as the first anniversary of a military coup that overturned the government approaches. Describing Honduras as a dysfunctional and failing state, Pax Christi is also calling for reform of the nation's judicial system to strengthen democracy. Two Pax Christi advocacy officers sat down with me soon after their return from a fact-finding mission to Honduras. Listen in to our conversation, beginning with some background.
In a June 2009 coup, troops in Honduras ousted President Manuel Zelaya and flew him out of the country after a power struggle over plans to change the constitution. Mr. Zelaya, elected for a non-renewable 4-year term in 2006, had wanted changes to the constitution that would allow a vote to extend his time in office. His arrest came just before the start of a referendum ruled illegal by the Supreme Court and opposed by Congress. There had also been resistance within Mr. Zelaya's own party to the plan for the vote. Congress appointed Speaker Roberto Micheletti, an outspoken critic of Zelaya's and member of the president's own Liberal Party, as acting head of state.
Well, it's not the first time the impoverished Central American country of 7 million has seen a dramatic coup. Two elected presidents were overthrown by the military in 1963 and 75, and it wasn't until 1981 that the army relinquished control of the government to civilians. But what is the situation in Honduras like today? Joining me in studio is Father Paul Lansu of the International Secretariat of Pax Christi International in Belgium, and Jeff Felix, who is on the executive board of Pax Christi International. I'd like to start with you, Father Paul. You were part of the Pax Christi fact-finding team that went to Honduras in March, 9 months after the coup. It was the second Pax Christi visit there since the recent coup. Could you give us a bit more background as to what led up to that coup and how the current government is generally viewed by the population?
Indeed, we went with seven people in a delegation of Pax Christi International to Honduras. And this was indeed the second visit looking at what is going on right now in the country and also to meet people and to discuss and to see what's going on. We have been meeting quite a lot of people, in a broad range of people, both from the church as well as from political parties, as well as diplomats, the civil society with trade unions and women's organizations, etc. And we had a good experience talking with these people, and many of these people were very, very frustrated about what happened last year. At the end of June, when the so-called coup d'état against President Zelaya took place, We noticed different juridical constitutional discussions about who is right and who is wrong in this discussion. It is difficult to find the real juridical approach on this. But anyway, most of the people we met stated that this was a coup d'etat and that for several reasons President Zelaya at that time he wanted to reform not only the constitution, but also he had some social programs to be implemented. And in fact, a coalition of people, different powers within the Honduran society and political circles, they came to the conclusion that the policies of President Zelaya at that time had to come to an end because they were afraid of having misdirections of the political situation in Honduras. There was also a strong link made by different of our speakers, making the link with the role of Venezuela in this game.
With Venezuela.
Venezuela, mm-hmm. President Chavez supporting President Zelaya, also other presidents of the region doing that. So it was very difficult to have the real situation having President Zelaya at that time over there. Anyway, the coup took place. Many people and even the international community stated that that coup is not allowed to take place. The USA, first of all, but also the United Nations, the European Union, the Organization of American States didn't accept that that could take place.
They condemned it.
They condemned it. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, elections took place in November last year. And there the debate was a bit, are you going to take part in the election process, yes or no? The new president came out of that. And in fact, the question is now, are we going to recognize this new government since November last year? Yes or no? Because one critical issue we also discussed with development and aid organizations is that since the coup d'etat, the finances and the aid promised by the international community stopped and was blocked. But who are the first victims of that policy? And we noticed that that the poor are the first victims of that type of policy. So we were a little bit also discussing about ourselves, and we were not clear among ourselves also about how to deal with that fact that you have to protect the poor and you have the option of the poor. But at the same time, are you now recognizing this government, which is coming out of a coup d'etat because of the fact that there is a need for development aid to be given to the poor and to the needed people, yes or no? So the question of recognition of the government, normalization, as it is called in political terms, is a big question. And meanwhile, we have noticed also that human rights have been violating quite strongly.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that the country is very poor. It's largely sustained by coffee and banana exports, from what I've been reading. But why is it that we don't hear anything about Honduras in the news?
That's we are questioning the same question. If you look at other parts of the world, even El Salvador, we were there also for the commemorations of the 30th anniversary of the murder of Monsieur Oscar Romero. There you have more international interest and more international attendance also from civil society from abroad. Well, there is a lack of interest into the situation of Honduras, and I don't know why that is. But indeed, Honduras is the second poorest country of that part of the world, next to Haiti. It is Honduras. And we traveled over the mountains a lot in Haiti from one city to the other also to meet bishops and to meet human rights defenders. And we have seen poverty in the barrios, etc. So it is a reality that Honduras is the second poorest country of that part of the world.
Jeff, this current government is seen as a de facto government. As Father Paul was saying, we have to come to a decision now whether to recognize the legality of this government or not. I mean, what was your feeling there on the ground? What do people want there?
We found that what the people want, first of all, is peace and return to normality and to a decent life. The majority is poor, and they are even becoming poorer now by the blockage of the humanitarian aid. But people are also asking that justice would be done. There is no reconciliation possible without justice.
Okay, what kind of justice? I mean, we don't know what's been going on really in Honduras. Yes. I understand that there has been a series of assassinations and violence. Now, who is perpetrating this against whom?
Yeah, indeed, you can read every day in the newsletters about assassinations of human rights people, especially also journalists are focus of these assassinations. And we noticed in our gatherings and in our discussions a lot of facts that human rights people are attacked by military and by certain parts of the authorities. And some of them have been killed. So there is a real problem of the human rights context right now in Honduras, especially since the events of the 28th of June last year. But it is still going on. It is even going worse. And there we really want to call the Honduran government to take its responsibility to protect also the human rights defenders. And especially, we need to mention that for sure, that is that in the Honduran society, there is a very big, what you can call, a resistance movement. It is, according to us, a non-violent resistance movement, although sometimes there are extremists infiltrating, etc., making use of violence and also threatening the cardinal, for instance. That has to be condemned for sure. But there is a broad resistance movement.
It's called the FNRP.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We call it a non-violent popular resistance movement. And it is composed of trade unions, of women's organizations, even sectors of the church are part of it. So, and they are asking for recognition by the political authorities that they exist, at least that they exist, because they are neglected by the political authorities right now. And so we discussed this also with the resistance movement leaders, whether they should become a political party, yes or no. They are not yet clear about that. But anyway, they are asking for a political space in the Honduran context. That is their request. But meanwhile, the human rights violations are going on, and that has to be condemned very clearly.
Now, Jeff, I know Pax Christi is joining those who've been calling for an immediate and impartial investigation into what are seen as politically motivated assassinations. You're also calling for reform of the country's judicial system to strengthen democracy there. Do you see any progress on this front?
So far, none. We have spoken about the so-called Truth Commission that the United Nations is calling for. But these Truth Commissions should be set up by the Honduran government. So they are at the same time judge and party.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know how impartial they would be, of course, right?
Therefore, we call that the United Nations should consider sending a special human rights rapporteur to Honduras to observe the process of the Truth Commission and to observe the process of restoring the judicial system, which is not functioning. You see, political world is not functioning, judicial world is not functioning, mm-hmm. The civil society tries to survive, but there's no democracy. So I'm afraid we have to say that Honduras at this moment is somehow a dysfunctioning state, not to say a failing state. And the first victims are the poor, the people.
Talking about the Truth Commissions, of course we are in favor of a Truth Commission for Honduras. But right now, I think, and right from the beginning, the conditions to have a good functioning Truth Commission were not there. And we are questioning the Truth Commission. Meanwhile, what needs to be done, and there is a lack of a kind of a dialogue within the society and within the political fractions. There is a lack of dialogue. You cannot start a Truth Commission without having discussions and dialogue amongst the different people. So they really need to set up a dialogue in the direction of reconciliation, in the direction of Truth Commissions, and healing of the past. And there I think the Roman Catholic Church can play a role and should play a good role in guiding a bit into the direction. The problem is that within the Catholic Church, not everybody is on the same line.
In what way? I know that some people have been critical of the bishops' conference in Honduras for not taking a line against
this
violence. That's
true. I think they have not come out with that statement at the right moment, you know. Mm-hmm. There is a need for some leadership from the Roman Catholic Church, at least, to say. But on the local level, many priests and pastoral workers, who are also under threats, by the way, but many of these local people from the church. They are very active in educating also the population. We met the different bishops, and even among the bishops, you can hear different opinions, analysis, that is true. But we really hope that the bishops' conference can come to kind of a consensus amongst themselves as well, and that they could take the lead in that direction of justice, in the direction of reconciliation through a truth commission, but an independent truth commission. And that should be the process to go.
Okay. And any action on the part of the international community other than what we've discussed before?
Well, certainly the whole issue of normalization should be discussed. And I think the USA has already normalized the relationship with Honduras. By the way, we met with the U.S. Ambassador in Tegucigalpa. And meanwhile, we are staying in contact also with him via email communication on the human rights violations. And he's followed up very closely what is happening on that side as well. But he's calling also the resistance movement to be... Well, for him it was a pity that they didn't participate in the elections. And so he's calling, in fact, the popular movement, the resistance movement, to become more official, formal political party and make use of that space they need as a political party. But they are not yet that far.
And a warm thanks there to Father Paul Lansou of the International Secretariat of Pax Christi International in Belgium, and to Jeff Felix of Pax Christi International's Executive Board. As Palestinians and Israelis begin a tenuous process of indirect peace talks, I can't help but think about the words of Pope John Paul II when he referred to peace in the Middle East, and particularly the role that forgiveness must play for any peace to take hold there. The head of the Catholic Church in Jerusalem, the Latin Patriarch Fuad Twal, says Muslims and Jews in the Holy Land can learn from the importance of forgiveness in Christianity. But education, too, is essential for peace.
Well, for us Christians, Catholic, we ask forgiveness many times a day. Each time that we pray to our Father who art in heaven, we ask Him to forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And we say this prayer many times daily. The forgiveness is an element of our life, of our religion. I think others are afraid from forgiveness. The Shoah itself, the Yad Vashem itself, it is not done for forgiveness or to forget. It is done to remind people of this crime, of this very sad, very dramatic situation. And they nourish that. Yeah, they will never pray our Father in Yad Vashem, because we are asking forgiveness from God as we are forgiveness to other people. In Yad Vashem, there is no place for forgiveness.
And of course, we have to remember the words of Pope John Paul II in regards to the Holy Land, when he said there can be no peace without justice and no justice without forgiveness.
We need to have this peace in the Middle East. We have to have more trust from each other, forgiveness from each other. I think we need a conversion. We need to change our mind, our speech, our mentality, to look the other as a brother and not always as an enemy, which supposes forgiveness and pardon and trust, more trust. The lack of peace is going together now, the lack of trust. The existence of so many walls between people and countries, it is a sign more that we do not trust each other and we are afraid from each other. With a wall separating us means I don't want to know anything from the other partner. And in this case, I don't see any sign of peace with the wall. We cannot shake hand from over the wall to the other, to your neighbor. If you want to shake hand and to dialogue, you have to cancel all these walls. the whole world that we can see, and the walls of hatred, of ignorance, of misunderstanding, and so on and so on. We need to go back to the gospel, to go back to God. We need to go back to our conversion, real conversion of heart, of mentality, and see in the others a friend, a brother, not only an enemy.
Of course, you're talking about the wall, which has really eliminated so many chances, possibilities for Israelis, Jewish and Arab, Muslims and Christians to shake hands, to talk to each other, to shop together, or at least in the same places. So there is no dialogue on those levels anymore. But another way, it seems to me, of creating trust and understanding would be through the educational system. One thing that has been very disturbing, I know many of the Catholic clergy in the Holy Land are concerned about, the fact that some of these young yeshiva students have been spitting on some of the Christian clergy. It seems to me that this is a question of how these young people are what they're learning about Christianity in their schools. What can you tell me about the educational system in Jewish schools, in Arab schools? Is there some sort of a program aimed at creating greater understanding amongst these different populations?
Yeah. We have in the Holy Land what we call Council of Interfaith Institutions, where we are only religious leaders, Jews, Muslims, and Christians. And I remember that the last meeting we had in Jerusalem, we took a theme, an argument, to study all the books of catechism that all of us have and to see what these books teach to the children, whether they teach more consideration, respect, and collaboration, or whether they teach hatred and ignorance. And the program was, we sponsored some expert people, knowing very well the Hebrew and the Arabic, to study these books from the beginning till the end. And I remember that in next June must be the last meeting, and we hope to meet with the two ministers of education, the Muslim one and the Jewish one in Israel, and to say to them, look what the books are teaching. If really you want collaboration and peace and respect and justice, first of all, we need more education. You have to counsel, to make a revision for these books, to change the books. That's the program that we already started. But we know that the education is the most important thing that we need. Last time we have been in the President House Press for the new year, and within the program they presented 12 very young girls studying in the same school of Catholic school in Haifa. And the young girls, lovely girls, there were Jews and Muslims and the Christians. And this group of young girls, they sang something for peace, for in Hebrew, in Arabic, and in English. And I remember I asked the President Peres whether he can distinguish between these young girls, who is the Jewish and the Muslims and the Christians. They were the same, 12, 13 years, lovely young people, the same. They could be our daughters, our nieces, our. It was okay, no problem. And I said to the President, if these young people, the fact that they play together and study together and eat together, it is the best dialogue of life that we can have. And if these young people could live together, study together, play together, why we don't, we big people, adult people, why we cannot do that? He said, you are right, and that's we give more importance to that.
You said you had a commission which has been studying the texts in Israel. Have you any preliminary findings so far?
I don't know really what they found. For sure they found something bad, teaching things against each other, I am sure. They didn't took our Christian books. They knew that we are calling for more charity and pardon. They took the Muslim books and the Israeli books. And for sure they have to change these books. I am sure about that.
Now, you're talking about the Arabic and the Hebrew books in the state of Israel.
Yeah.
What about outside? I mean, you're, after all, the patriarch of the Catholics outside of the state of Israel, in the Palestinian territories, too.
Well, it is already big, great, if we can change the books of the Israeli and the Muslims in Palestine. Let us start with one point, yeah? At that, we have to start in something, yeah? It is okay. And if we can, we can arrange and make a revision for the books in Palestine. We can make them in Jordan and so on in the other countries.
The Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal. This news from the Vatican. Through its Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, the Vatican has sent warm wishes to the world's Buddhist community as it celebrates one of its principal festivities. The annual feast of Vesak, the most important for Buddhists, will be celebrated May 21st in countries that follow the Theravada tradition, mostly in South and Southeast Asian nations, including Thailand, Sri Lanka, Cambodia, Burma, Malaysia, Indonesia, and India. It was celebrated in Japan on May 8th. The feast marks the principal events in the life of Buddha. Charles Collins has this report.
In his message marking the occasion, Cardinal Jean-Louis Touraine, the president of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, called for Christians and Buddhists to work together in promoting the respect of human life in today's society. The Cardinal writes that the efforts of both of the communities in interreligious dialogue have raised awareness on a theme of particular relevance today, the environmental crisis, which he says has already caused notable hardship and suffering throughout the world. Our responsibility to protect nature comes from the law inscribed in the hearts of all men and women. Consequently, when human ecology is respected within society, environmental ecology also benefits. He says both Christianity and Buddhism have a profound respect for human life. Therefore, it's crucial that we reaffirm our shared convictions about the inviolability of human life, the dignity of the person, and the unique commission of the family. The Cardinal concludes by saying, by sharing the insights and commitments of our respective religious traditions, we can contribute to the well-being of our world. I'm Charles Collins.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.